And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you for the next 4 hours. And boy, are we going to cover a lot of ground and talk to a lot of folks. It's going to be fun. Going into the weekend, an action-packed weekend, of course, coming out on the other side. We'll get you geared up for the Titans and Bills Monday Night Football. Part of getting you geared up for that, if I can spit it out, Andre Reed today at 12:30, following you just made the list. So that should be some good stuff there in the third hour. Elijah Campbell's manning things at our game studios. We'll give some stuff away. We'll take your calls. We'll do it all. Chase, what's going on?
Not much. Just feeling good here on a Friday. It's going to be a busy one, a rainy one, it looks like. But a lot to get into from last night, and a lot to preview ahead. So looking forward to our show. Brian Greasy going to join us. Jackie Redman. We're covering all grounds.
Indeed, we are. Plus, there's a big tilt in Rutherford County tonight that
yes,
we'll get into
that
in the second hour as well, that you that you're going to be a part of.
I am now. Going to be exciting. Didn't have that on my schedule until last night, so excited about it.
I've kind of made a little bit of a goof. I don't know what's happened, Chase, but I've got blood squirting all over my finger, so I need to put a Band-Aid on.
Okay, yeah,
you
take care of that for a second.
Yeah,
that's not good.
Let me patch this up real quick and off to a weird start, and I'll be right back.
Yeah, no, that's got to take care of that. Willie will be here in just a second.
That's a show first, right?
I
think an on-site injury there.
It might be. It definitely might be. So I could tell something was up, and then he's like, hang on, I need a second. So hope everything's okay with Darren. As we said, a lot to discuss from last night and over the weekend. Let's start at Bridgestone Arena as the Predators open their season. And unfortunately for them, they did make history last night, but not the way that they wanted to. And they are now going to go in the history books as the first win for the Seattle Kraken in their history. The Kraken come in, win the game 4-3. Just never really felt the Predators did strike first, and they got on the board early with the Ellie Tolvanen goal, and I thought, okay, yeah, that's good. That's a good way to start, had a little momentum on their side, and then they let Seattle get back into it with Jared McCann scoring a power play goal. They had two power play goals relatively close together to take a 2-1 lead in the first. So McCann with his second goal of the year, and then Brandon Tanev gets his first of the year, and both of those going on the power play. And it just – the Preds looked a little off kilter from there. Hung UC Saros out to dry a couple times, and there was – you know, and there he didn't necessarily look mid-season form. It was game one. You didn't expect him to, but the Preds just didn't quite have it on all cylinders. Battled some at the end. Mikael Granlund scored, but again they gave up the empty netter to Tanev for his second of the night, and that's how it all shook out and ended up being the final. Willie Donick joins us now as the Kraken win 4-3 last night to get their first win. And Willie, like I was saying, Darren's back. We'll update you on that in just a second. Darren had an issue, but he's back.
Oh, I had an issue.
Yeah. Well, I hope I'm the only one that...
I'm glad you didn't have an issue, or else we'd be in trouble.
I know. Well, I've been here for... I had to do some other things, so I got here a little early. So
you had other issues.
Well, no issues, just duties.
Yeah, duties.
Yeah.
Okay.
You good, Darren? Are you
yeah,
back?
I was afraid if I just sat here, didn't say anything, I was going to bleed out, and that may get weird on the air, you know?
Yeah.
Darren, your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, he somehow cut his finger and was bleeding.
No idea what I did, but I was like,
drew blood.
I might want to address this. I've got blood shooting all over the place. So, yeah, let's take care of that. All good. All good. Well, it didn't go the Predators' way last night. They fall 4-3 to the Kraken. So the Kraken notch their first ever franchise victory. Ellie Tolvanen got the night started right. Crowd was into it. He gets his first goal of the season just over 3 minutes in. Looks like it's going to be a special night. And then, quite honestly, I thought kind of their game tailed off after that. I think they played good in the third. They were playing catch up. They were the better team in the third. They were mashing the gas pedal, I think, in the third.
They had fight in them in the
third.
But
still, overall, it was just like, eh.
Yeah.
Got to see more.
Well, especially the penalty kill there towards the end of the first. I mean, they, you know, with McCann and Tanev scoring those two power play goals. I mean, I thought that was kind of the game changer there for Seattle. And, I mean, this is how Seattle's going to win games. They're going to come in and they're going to be scrappy, and they're going to try and slow the pace. I mean, overall, you and I were talking about this a little bit last night, Darren. It was a boring game. And I mean, I know you had a couple of scraps. You had Yakov Trenin dropping the mitts, and I thought that was good how he did that. But, you know, this is how Seattle's going to have to win these games with the type of roster that they have. And they just they capitalized early in the game in the first period with those two power play goals and really had control from that point.
I as you mentioned, Darren, I thought they got off to a really good start. They score on the first shot of the season, and I think they're trying to settle into their game. And this is one of those catch-22s that happens in hockey a lot. I think we know what the Predators' identity is, what they want to be. And so there's a big legal hit on Colton Sissons. He gets leveled to the ice. And Yakov Trenin steps up, and he wants to take issue with it, and he beats the heck out of Vince Dunn. And that's good. Like, that's what you want. That gets everybody excited on the bench. It gets the crowd into it. Everybody's fired up. But then you have to kill the penalty if you're going to do that, because Trenin knows when he does that, he's going to end up in the box because he starts the fight, and that's how it works. He's sort of the third man in there. So you got to kill it. And they did, and they didn't do it. And not only that, it snowballs because on the it's a weird goal. UC Saros can't see it. Dante Fabro is sort of late getting there. It goes off of him and goes in. So it went off of Fabro and into the net. Kind of a nothing play. Not really a dangerous scoring chance, but goes in. It's the way the puck bounces sometimes. Okay, game's tied. On the ensuing faceoff, I don't know what happened to Carrier. He wasn't ready. He got a little bit mixed up on how he wanted to position himself, and he takes a bad trip. Like, it was right off the faceoff. You don't give up a scoring chance on that. But they were going to, and he has to trip the guy. And the Kraken cash in. So that whole hit to Sissons and the retaliation flip-flopped the whole game. Because instead of you're dictating to a team in the Kraken, that's not a real offensive force. They're really a goaltending defensive team out, at least on paper now. You allowed them to get the lead. And then, as you guys said, I mean, it settles into really a low-chance game. Not a lot goes on. The Predators get the tying goal. They had the one. They didn't give up a whole lot offensively, 5-on-5 all night, but they had the one stretch there where they got hemmed into their own zone. And they completely lost the coverage, got worn down, had chances to clear the puck, didn't. And they cashed in on the – who's guarding Wennberg? Who's got him?
Right.
Like, he was all by himself forever.
Apparently nobody.
They completely lost him. I think that's what happens when you get tired, right? They were just getting grinded on that shift. And other than that, I don't think they gave up a whole lot of chances 5-on-5. But Seattle was able to hold the lead.
Oh, Hal Gill described it perfectly last night on postgame. He's like, yeah – I challenge anybody. Go battle somebody in the corner for 30 seconds.
That's what happened.
I can go skate up and down the ice for a minute and a half, no problem. He goes, go battle somebody in the corner for 30 seconds. He goes, like, eventually, like, your brain shuts down. It's tiring. He's basically making the point, you know, when you get to that point, all bets are off. But, you know, just going back and forth up and down the ice, he's like, yeah, you can take a long shift, do that all day long. But go battle somebody in the corners for a bit and see how you feel afterwards. Oh, by the way, especially when you can't get it out of your zone and the team keeps pressure. So, you know, just one of those plays. I mean, it's not like it's the first time we've ever seen somebody hanging out back door wide open and they capitalize on it, and it won't be the last time, unfortunately. It happens. Mm-hmm. Predators will do it to somebody as well. Just overall, I just wanted to see more. For the first game of the season at home against a brand-new franchise, just was looking for a little bit more zip. Hey, we use zip a lot this week on the show. needs to see a little bit more zip, just a little bit more oomph to him.
Yeah.
And it didn't really feel like it was there.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I talked to Brent Peterson between the second and the third period. And, of course, this is when they were at the height of, you know, not able to get much going. And John Hines said that after the game. And I said, what's going on? I was like, where's the forecheck? Because that's how the Predators are going to need to generate offense. You know, put the puck in behind the defense, smash them up a little bit, create some turnovers, turn those into scoring chances. You know, they're not going to light up the scoreboard up and down, you know, and win the game 5-4. And Brent Peterson said this. This was interesting. If you look at the Seattle defense, big, strong guys, Oleksiak, Larson, Soucy, who I thought played a really good game, he said they did a great job of getting the puck. They absorbed the pressure. They moved the puck out. They didn't turn it into scoring chances, but how many times did they ice the puck, too? If they were in trouble, just shoot it down the ice, forget about it. They just did a good job of protecting the middle, playing it simple road game. They got the lead. That was the key. That's they were able to play with the lead. And if they can do that, I think the Kraken are going to win some games. They have good goalies. The Predators were much better in the third period. They gave up two shot attempts in the third period. The Predators did. One of them was into the into the empty net. That was the only shot they had in the entire period. And the Predators had 21 shot attempts, but only a couple scoring chances. Tolvanen had the one in the slot on the redirect. Great save by Grubauer. And then Trennan had the one in the slot where there was that loose puck. Grubauer stopped him point blank. Other than that, you know, a lot of stuff on the outside. Just need to find a way to get in, get those second chances, and bury him.
Eagles have sent Pro Bowl tight end Zach Ertz to the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona loading up. Boy, you think they're going for it this year? They just acquired Zach Ertz in exchange for cornerback Tate Gowan and a 2022 fifth-round pick, according to sources that have told Adam Schefter. So, interesting. Willie, you've got a word about Lee Company. We'll come back with Brian Greasy.
All right, Lee Company, 567-1000, area code 615. It was great to be back in Smashville last night. And Lee Company is a big sponsor of Nashville Predators hockey, very supportive of all of the sports community. And we had our maintenance check yesterday. We're part of the home maintenance plan. I've been telling you about it for years. So we do it ourselves in the Donick House. We had the representative from Lee Company come out. He was awesome. Checked the heating unit, the cooling unit while he was there. We have an upstairs unit that's way up in the attic. He was crawling up there, checking it all out, doing a good job for us. And so that's the idea. He made his recommendations going forward. And so when we need to make the necessary adjustments, repairs, we'll get discounts on that. That's part of the home maintenance plan. It works really well. You stay ahead of the curve. You don't get into the crisis. You haven't had to use the heat yet. You're going to. So don't wait until it's 30 degrees outside, 20 degrees, before you even know whether it's working properly or not, if it's running efficiently or not. It's going to save you money long term. The home maintenance plan from Lee Company, 615-567-1000 or leecompany.com. Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Here on ESPN 102.5, The Game on this Friday morning. Our show is presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD products curated for life. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe. And yeah, you hear the music. You know it's coming to town. Nissan Stadium Monday night. Titans hosting the Bills. And our next guest will be in the booth. It was Steve Levy and Lewis Riddick. They'll be calling the game for you as the Titans try to pull off a win against the Bills, and the Bills look really good. And Brian Greasy has been nice enough to join us. Brian, good morning. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Well, we're doing better than Mike Vrabel and his coaching staff trying to figure out how to beat this Bills team, because we've been trying to do that all week, and, man, it's hard. It's hard to figure out how you beat this Bills team, because when you look up and down their lineup, as you've done in preparation for this game, they don't really have very many holes, do they?
No, they don't. And, you know, as much as you would like to look back at last year's game, the 42-16 Titans win in dominating fashion, this is a different football team, a different Buffalo Bills team that's playing with a lot of confidence. I know last year they came into that game 4-0, And I do think there are some things that Mike Vrabel and the staff can take away from that that game and have some confidence in relaying to the players as to what the recipe and the game plan is to win. But it certainly is going to be a much bigger challenge this go-round.
Give us the quarterback perspective when you watch Josh Allen play and just the growth to where he is today in 2021. I don't know how many people projected this type of career. I realize he was a first-round pick, but I wasn't sure what the Bills had in Josh Allen. But when you watch Josh Allen play, what do you see?
Yeah, actually, I covered Josh Allen in college at Wyoming. I was doing some college football, 5-6 years ago, and had a chance to go up there a couple of times to watch Josh play. And you could see the physical talent, the ability to throw the ball, to get out and run outside the pocket. You know, he was a much more physical runner back then. I mean, I think that the coaching staff and Sean McDermott has gotten to him and said, listen, man, we don't need you to bowl over people all the time. He can do that when you need him to, and he will around the goal line, you know, lower his pads because he's 240 pounds now. So, but he has grown leaps and bounds. You know, the big question about him coming out was his accuracy. And the first season, he struggled. And everybody thought, well, it's mechanics and this and that. And I said, no, I think it's more so just understanding the game and where your guys are going to be, the concepts that you're running, how to read defenses. I think he's benefited tremendously from having the continuity at the offensive coordinator position in Brian Daboll for four consecutive seasons. So not only does he know the offense, he's been able to learn defenses. And Daboll has had the opportunity to build this offense around what Josh likes to do. And that is invaluable for a young quarterback, and I think you've seen the results.
Yeah. On the other side, on the Titan side of things, when you watch Ryan Tannehill and when he took over from Mariota, I mean, he has been really, really good. He's not been the same this year, Brian. As you know, the offensive line has had their fair share of struggles. He hasn't had his two big weapons for most of the season to this point in A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. Maybe that's about to change. But when you see Tannehill, what do you see?
Yeah, you know, I look back to last season first and foremost. And, you know, we did the playoff game against Baltimore. And I looked back and studied Ryan, you know, throughout the course of the season. And I saw a quarterback who was operating at a high level, efficient level. While he's got a lot of characteristics like Josh Allen, big, can run around, can move, has plenty of arm strength. Not as much as Josh, obviously. But I see a quarterback that you can build around, and Tennessee and Mike Vrabel have built around him. Now, I'm a little disappointed that we haven't been able to see what we wanted to see from this Titans offense this season, which was having your three big stars on the field at the same time, and Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, and then adding Julio Jones. They've only been on the field 21% of the snaps. So I was excited to see that both Julio and A.J. practiced yesterday, and hopefully they go again today, and they're healthy for this game. Because that's what we all want to see on Monday night, is the full complement for this offense. And then, you know, the biggest question at that point will be, you know, Roger at left guard. You know, Taylor has been in and out of the lineup. And after what happened week one, I've got questions about Taylor and what's going on at left tackle. But if they can get some, and then obviously, you know, some Brilo with the retirement. I mean, there's a lot of
turmoil issues
up front right now and inconsistencies that they have to get figured out. But that's what we want to see, the full complement. And if they can do that, then I think they have a chance to control this game on the offensive side. And that's what you have to do against the Bills, keep the ball out of Josh Allen's hands.
We're talking to Brian Griese, Monday Night Football coming up. He'll be on the coverage, of course, for ESPN. And, Brian, just thinking back, you're very familiar with, you know, the running game. You know, you played for the Broncos during that era where – you know, you had Terrell Davis doing amazing things. And this, the way they use Derrick Henry is a little bit of a throwback to that. Lots of carries, 2,000 yards. They're leaning on him so heavily because of all those things that you just discussed. Issues on pass protection, not having all the weapons. But what would your level of concern be, especially in this day and age and how the game has evolved, on how they're using Derrick Henry? Are you concerned that they will burn out at some point just going to that well?
Listen, you can't have it both ways, guys, okay? If they weren't giving Derrick Henry the ball, you'd be complaining about him not giving Derrick Henry the ball. He's the best back in the game right now. So you have to give him the ball. You're right. I did play in an era with the Broncos where we ran the ball quite a bit. And remember, this offense, going back to Matt LaFleur, and then Arthur Smith, a byproduct of him, this stretch outside zone game, and then the play action off of that, the boots, the nakeds, which take advantage of what Ryan does really well, and then being able to take these shots down the field with AJ and Julio. That's the recipe, guys. So you have to run the ball first to set up those play actions. And so I'm okay with the way that they're using Derek. I think they understand, and I'm sure Mike gets, a question every week about, the load on Derrick Henry. So you do have to sprinkle in, McNichols and hopefully Darrington Evans can be healthy and be that kind of changeup. But you got to give them the football. You have to wear down defenses. And in particular, in this matchup, I think you're going to have to control the game on that side of the ball. So Derek's got to be a big portion of that. Now, the Bills have had a lot of success against Derek. I don't think he's gotten over 75 yards in any of the three games that he's gone up against Leslie Frazier. And this is a good defense, especially having Star Lotulelei back inside. So it's not going to be easy to run the football. So maybe you do have a little bit more, open it up a little bit more if AJ and Julio are healthy, throwing the ball on first down and take some pressure off of Derek, knowing you're going to get eight-man fronts from the Bills. That might be a change-up strategy this week.
Brian, just a note on your coverage. I know that there's been some news. There's going to be a Monday night playoff game coming up. That's exciting. But give us your thoughts about the chemistry between the three of you guys. I've really enjoyed how you guys have meshed. But here you guys are, and you're in another year going forward here. You got a big game coming up here. But give us a little insight on how that's worked.
Yeah, thank you. We are fired up about the Monday night playoff game. I mean, you can imagine. Playoffs are huge. We had a blast doing our wild card game there in Nashville last year. I know it didn't turn out the way that the Titans fans wanted, but it was a great environment. And just to think of having this primetime game this year and a standalone on Monday night, kind of where we live all year, it just makes a lot of sense. And so we've got that game for the next 5 years, and we're fired up about that. And for Steve and Lewis and myself, last year we were not able to, because of the pandemic, to spend the time together like we normally would. I mean, we couldn't go out to eat together. We weren't in the same room. We were in our hotel rooms, and the only time we spent together was in the booth. So it was very, very different and difficult. Obviously, I've worked with Steve Levy for 5 years and know him, but it was our first time working with Lewis, his first time doing games in the booth. So it was a growth process for all of us. This year feels so much better. We know kind of what each other likes to talk about, likes to do. I think the chemistry has gone through the roof. We have fun. It's entertainment at the end of the day. We love breaking down the game, Lewis and I. We have different ways of seeing the game, which I think benefits the broadcast, and hopefully the fan at home is learning something at the end of the day, and that's our goal. And they understand why the game was won or lost. The coach's decisions and all those interesting things that go into the outcomes of games. That's where we really want to be sharp. And so it's been a ton of fun. I'm having a blast, and I know those guys are as well.
We're talking to Brian Griese. He will be on the telecast for Monday Night Football as it comes to town, Titans and Bills. And you were talking about, from your quarterback eyes and the different things that Tannehill has faced this year, and one is the play caller, and Todd Downing and Arthur Smith did such a tremendous job, now the head coach of the Falcons. But in your experience, is there really just – not necessarily a set amount of time for chemistry to develop, but what are some things that you really need to work on from the get-go between the quarterback and the play caller that could present some issues like I think we've seen some with the Titans of maybe they're on the same page but not maybe as well as they could be.
Yeah, it's not going to be, you know, as seamless as it was obviously with Arthur a year ago. It's going to take time for Todd. Now, Todd's had the advantage of being there and seeing you know, the way that Arthur ran the offense, and I'm not totally sure how many of the meetings he was in with Ryan to understand what he liked to do, what he didn't like to do. But it takes time. I look at the third down and red zone numbers. I mean, that really was the reason why the Titans offense was so good a year ago, was on third downs they were amazing, and red zone they were historically good, and this year they haven't. Again, it goes back to some of the injuries, and we understand that. But as far as this offense gelling, I think the great thing for the Titans is they're sitting here at 3-2. They're two games up in the division, and we're talking about trying to find their rhythm and gelling on offense, and they haven't had their full complement. So that's a great spot to be operating from. They're going to be there at the end. And they may not be the top two seeds in the AFC, but if they can win their division and grow as an offense and get healthy and understand, maybe they have to have some of these younger offensive linemen contribute. But if they can get to a point at the end of this season where finally, you know, they have some continuity and Todd understands the rhythm of this offense and where he can go for production, I think that's kind of the strategy they have to go after.
How have you seen, you know, we've talked about the tight end a lot and trying to replace Jonnu Smith here in Nashville. Now with New England, they've used Anthony Firkser some, but he was more of a depth role in the past. But how have you seen just the tight end position and how the quarterbacks use the tight end change in the last 5 to 10 years in the NFL?
Oh, well, the last 5 to 10 years, it has really changed. I mean, you know, tight ends are extended in the formation now more than ever. You know, you typically have, you know, the blocking tight end and the receiving tight end, a Y tight and F tight end, which is a move tight end who, you know, Anthony Firkser is a great example, converted wide receiver, you know, and what he's able to do is, you know, the mismatches that he creates are a favorable situation for Todd Downing in this offense, but I think you still have to have that end of line tight end that is able to block, that's able to, you know, secure the edge, especially playing against 3-4 defenses where you got 260-270 pound outside linebackers that you have to set the edge, especially in this offense where you're running outside zone, right? So you know, Jeff and Michael Pruitt. You know, I think Jeff's a little bit, you know, further along blocking from a blocking standpoint. But I think you've got to have 2-3 good tight end options, and one of which needs to be kind of a mismatch opportunity when you extend them in the formation. And that's where Anthony has been so valuable to this offense.
You and Mike Vrabel were in the league at about the same time, so you know what he was like as a player. But now that you see him from afar as a head coach, what's kind of your overall thoughts of him and how he conducts business here in Nashville?
Yeah, I've got a lot of respect for Mike, despite the fact he went to Ohio State, and you know, I had battles with him, and then he goes to New England, and I'm in Denver, and we continue it. So I've got a lot of respect. He's a great football coach, and I really respect, you know, guys like that played the game. And then make that transition. He learned from, you know, the best in New England, and so I just think that there are 5 or 6 times during the course of the game where Mike will make a decision that really influences and increases the Titans' percentage chance of winning the game, and it might not be viewable to the fan. It may not even be viewable to me during the course of the game, but, you know, situational football, clock management, you know, fourth downs, analytics, I think he's on top of it, and I really respect that going above and beyond just the X's and O's of defensive football. You know, I really respect when a coach like that, a former player, is on the details, and there's no doubt he is.
Last thing real quick, Brian, just because it just happened, I wanted to get your opinion. I know you haven't had an Arizona Cardinals game yet. You will down the road. They're off to a tremendous start, and they just traded for Zach Ertz, the tight end from the Eagles. What do you make of that move? And, you know, Arizona's already been here. They came in here to first game of the season, and Chandler Jones, I think, had 15 sacks, and Arizona ripped the Titans apart. So what do you think of Arizona loading up for this year and going for it and just acquiring Zach Ertz?
Yeah, look at you breaking news, huh?
It wasn't me. It was Adam Schefter.
Okay. So I think that's a direct result of them losing Max Williams, who was their tight end. And that's unfortunate for Max. But, you know, Steve Keim understands the window that they're operating in. You bring in a J.J. Watt and A.J. Green on the offensive side. There's no question Arizona knows that they have the squad to compete deep into the playoffs. And so it's not surprising at all. It is a scary team. I mean, it is a loaded team. The question that's always come up with them was Kyler Murray. Can he stay healthy? Now, he injured his throwing shoulder this past week, so we'll see. You know, they were off to a hot start last year, and then Kyler got dinged up, and they went in the tank, and they couldn't get out. So I know that they're the, you know, them and the Buffalo Bills are the hot teams in the NFL right now, but you know, it's early. So we'll see. But that's not a surprise they went out and got Zach.
Yep, good stuff. Hey, really appreciate the visit. We'll be certainly watching your coverage. Enjoy the game on Monday. And thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure, guys. Can't wait to get to Nashville, one of my favorite spots.
All right, love it. Brian Greasy, he'll be in the booth Monday night with Steve Levy and Lewis Riddick. Monday Night Football, Titans hosting the Bills, ESPN. And ABC. Good talk there with him. We'll come back more on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Last chance today. Better be listening in the noon hour. We're going to have You Just Made the List and Andre Reed and a chance for you to win tickets to see the Titans and the Bills on Monday night. Yes. Noon hour today on our show and the 4 o'clock hour today to qualify. When you hear that cue to call, be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025. Two winners will be announced today at 5:30. Two winners announced today at 5:30 to be at Nissan Stadium for the Titans and the Bills on Monday Night Football. So be listening in the noon hour. Good stuff there from Brian Greasy. Jackie Redmond from NHL Network will join us here in just a few minutes. Last night getting home, we're back in that routine. You get home from the game, you're a little bit wired, you can't really go to sleep, although I was kind of tired, more tired than normal. But I still wanted to watch the end of the Giants and the Dodgers. And not kind of, but a really controversial third strike check call on Flores. That was not a strike.
It was a check swing.
Yeah, check swing.
Oh, it was a bad call.
It was a horrible call. He didn't go around.
You have to know as an ump in that situation.
Like, you end somebody's season on that call, really?
Just like, if it's that close, and it was not a strike. It was a check swing.
But it really wasn't close, honestly. That's what's weird. Like, you know, this is what I've noticed.
Why can't they replay that? Why can't they go look at it and get it right?
Because there's so much gray area in that. There's no way. That'd be just as bad as pass interference.
Why? They're looking at it just like us and going, oh, okay, maybe that wasn't a strike.
In that instance, that would have been an easy one to fix, but most of them were not. Most of them. And I really think they need to start resetting what a check swing is. They need to look closer into it. If you go back a generation and you look at some old games, which, yes, I'm a nerd, I do that sometimes, the standard for a check swing used to be much, much different. You could go way around in this day and age back then, and it wasn't a swing. They would check. Oh, no, he didn't go. I mean, and you would be like, are you kidding me? He went way around. Now, it is anything close, they're ringing you. It's really changed that way. I don't know if there was never a decision. It just gradually happened.
Did he break his wrist?
No, he didn't even come close.
I didn't think so.
Now, remember what the rule is. The rule doesn't have anything to do with breaking your wrists or the bat coming out across home plate. Those are all just conceptual things. It's just basically a judgment call straight up from the guy. Did he offer at the pitch? And what is considered an offer at the pitch now is not what it was.
Yeah.
20, 30 years ago. It's really evolved slowly over time. It's a little bit like the kicking motion in hockey, which they readjusted a couple years ago, I think in a good way, and it's allowed more goals to stand. I think they've got to do that with Major League Baseball. That's my thought. And maybe this is the kind of call that will get that happening, but I mean, I don't know what the guy was thinking. That was not a strike. That was not a swing. Now, Wilmer Flores has never gotten a hit off of Max Scherzer. I think he's like 0 for 18. So his chances of getting hit in that situation were not good anyway, but don't tell the Giants fans that, because when you're up there and you got a chance, you have a chance.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Well, it's not about saying, man, if you call that correctly, the Giants tie it up or they win. It's not about that. Like, you ended someone who won 109 games, you ended their season on that call. Like, give me a break. I just don't understand when you say, well, it's gray area, it's like that. No, that's why you have it. You're going to end somebody's season. Like, all you need to do is go there, put a headset on, look at it, and come back, go, yep, no.
On that one. That's
a ball.
That's not the
game
case.
Game is continued. Sorry. Yes,
on that one, you're right. On that one, that was an egregious screw-up. But most check swings are way in the gray area. There's no way you could review it and just say yay or nay. Unless you had some sort of computerized thing. That's just like, I mean, if you're going to do that, then you might as well just review balls and strikes then.
Implement.
And just have the electronic
strike zone. To me, in the playoffs, everything is fair game. Playoffs, everything is fair game. When someone's season is on the line, anything is in play. That's the way I would do it.
Yeah.
That would be the rules if that were me. Hey, in the playoffs, you can do whatever you want when it comes to review. Get it right. That's all we're asking. Get it right in the playoffs.
Should we review holding in the playoffs for football?
What if the rule was not necessarily you're reviewing balls and strikes and getting down to things like that, but if it's the last play of the game, if it's a close, controversial play, no matter what the play is, whether it's a called strike or whatever, check swing, you can say, hey, we're going to look at it. We're going to make sure it's right because this is the play that ends the game.
I don't need it to be end the game. I just want you to get it right in the playoffs.
I know.
It's a travesty. That's a travesty for a team that won 109 games. I mean, it wasn't even close.
No.
I mean, it's just not even close. Like, you can't – when you say gray area, and this one, there was no gray area. You look at it one time and go, whoops, mistake.
No question. But that's one of the weirdest calls in baseball, always has been and always will be, and the game is imperfect. I just don't think replay would solve that problem. It would have on that play for sure, but it wouldn't in a lot of cases. It would just create more controversy.
Well, tell that to the Giants.
I know. The game's imperfect.
It stinks that their season ended that way.
Oh, it was awful.
It was a great series.
Brutal. Terrible.
And I don't have any rooting interest. I mean,
I have my wish.
Yeah. Mookie Betts, 4 for 4, by the way.
Did I say that yesterday? A big game,
yeah.
Betts? Look at the last two games. When the Dodgers needed wins, who showed up? Nashville and Mookie Betts. All right, let's bring in Jackie Redmond. We always enjoy our chats with her. She is free. She is out of the bubble. She is just walking around, just free as can be, from NHL Network. Jackie, how you doing?
I'm awesome, you guys. Excited to be joining you so early in the season. I'm pumped.
I know. You know, when you come next time you come to Nashville, we'll just take you over to the Titans bubble just so you can feel like you're back in a bubble, just to kind of, you know, relive those memories.
Well, listen, next time I'm in Nashville is next week. I'm going to be there on Tuesday for the game. So I believe they're playing the Kings, and then I'll be there Tuesday, Wednesday. So I'm coming to your turf in a matter of days, actually.
Awesome.
Oh, look, wait a minute. Okay. Awesome. So you'll be in the house Tuesday night.
Yes, we're going to do NHL Now on location ahead of that game, and then I'm going to experience a Nashville Predators game. I actually have never seen a hockey game there, so I'm really excited to see what this fan atmosphere experience is all about, because it gets a lot of hype. So I want to see if it lives up to it.
What do you think you're walking into? Let's do this now, and then we can do the follow-up after you experience it. So what do you think? So you've never been here, so you've heard all this stuff. Like, what do you think you're coming to next week?
Okay, well, based on what I've heard, I'm expecting it to be rowdy.
Okay.
I'm expecting it to be a vocal crowd, a crowd that spends a lot of time on their feet, perhaps. I have been to Nashville, so I am also expecting it'll be a bit of a party in there, just based on the geography. But yeah, that's all I got.
I think you're going to be able to check all those boxes. I really feel good about that.
I hope so. Like, I am getting myself prepared mentally for this trip because I'm expecting to walk out of there a different Jackie Redmond, maybe.
If there's one thing this market has got, we've got covered, a rowdy crowd and a party. We've got those bases covered. Should be a lot of fun. All right, that's awesome. Well, we didn't know you were coming to town next week. That's cool. So the NHL season is off and running. Unfortunately, the Predators opened their season last night against the Kraken, and the Kraken logged their first ever franchise victory, their first ever power play goal. You know, the trivia questions, you know, that we'll be answering 5-10 years down the road. This Kraken team is pretty good. I think it's unfair because of what Vegas did to hold them to any type of standard like that. But when you look up and down their lineup, they're just a really, really solid team. They don't really have any holes. They don't have – it's not like a ton of wow and, you know, star power everywhere. It's just up and down the lineup. You look and go solid, 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 good player, really good player, really good player. And I think that's how they're going to roll this year. What do you think?
I'm with you. I do think the bar from Vegas, I know it's human tendency. We're going to compare the two teams because it's just what we do in this business. I don't think they're going to be quite go to the Stanley Cup final Vegas in their first year good, but I do think they're going to be competitive, and I think that they're going to be a solid team that competes for a playoff spot this year. I think they have a good coach based on what I've heard from him just the last couple of weeks and after their first game loss. I thought that the way he was speaking kind of gave me confidence in the way that he's approaching the season with the team, which is let's evaluate ourselves. Let's, you know, look at what we're doing well and look at what we're not doing well. And I know that every team does that, but the way that he spoke about it to me just exuded the type of confidence that you see from someone who is not just, you know, talking the talk, they're going to walk the walk, and someone that is very focused on the process. And I think when you're focused on the process, it's almost impossible not to get better as time goes on. So I'm expecting Seattle to be an interesting, fun team to watch. And I want to see Gord back in the lineup. I mean, that's a huge part of their team, and I want to see what he's like away from his best buddies from Tampa, away from that third line. Like, what kind of player will he be without what he's grown accustomed to on that very now famous line from Tampa's that two cup run?
I've been saying all week as we've tried to evaluate the Central Division, to anybody we've had on the show, whether it was A.J. Molesko or Chris Mason or Hal Gill, I've said, Jackie, I feel very confident about this. This is before the season began. Colorado is the best team in the Central, and Arizona is the worst team. So I've got 1-8. I've got it figured out. 2-7, I don't have a clue. I really have no idea how 2-7 is going to play out in the Central. So I'll ask you the same thing. When you kind of look at the Predators division, how do you feel about it? Do you feel the same way that 2-7, or do you feel strongly about maybe a couple teams that you think are going to be up there at the top pushing Colorado?
Well, I'll tell you this. Listening to you talk, all I could think about was the Nashville Predators, because going into last night and in the conversations that I've had about the Preds, like, I have no idea what to make of this Predators team, because last year, not only was it the shortened season, which really makes it hard to measure anything of what we saw last year because it wasn't a normal year. They weren't playing the entire league. It was all interdivision and all of that stuff. But they were supposed to be a seller at the deadline, and then UC Saros goes on a crazy heater, and they stand pat, and now they're coming into a full 82-game slate. And it really all boils down to Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson. But we had Lindsay Rowley on the show yesterday, and she said something that really stuck out to me about Johansson, saying that this is his favorite group of people and players that he's entered a season with in Nashville. I'm like, that's an interesting comment, I kind of like that. I kind of feel like, okay, like, this is your favorite group. This is the group you get along the best with. Well, let's see your best year then, Ryan Johansson. I want to see the best year from Ryan Johansson this year with the Preds. And I think it's going to boil down to those core players doing what they were brought in to do. And I think you guys would all agree. I don't think we've really completely, totally seen that from start to finish in a season from those guys yet.
That would be big. That would be big. Jackie Redmond is with us, NHL Network, NHL on TNT. And Jackie, just a quick aside, I did not see Lindsay's appearance yesterday. Did Charlie make an appearance? Because it's about over under at least 1.5 times that her dog gets into the shot when she's on with you guys.
Oh, yeah. You got to take the over on that bet every single time. Yeah, Charlie made the show. Charlie was taking his pregame nap. He was actually laying at the feet of Lindsay Rowley under the desk, just chilling, you know, getting ready for a big home opener. So Charlie was relaxing, which I respect.
Well, tell us about the TNT crew, because we all were watching with curiosity the other day. They had, of course, the big panel with the Great One, and you know, you got Rick Tocchet in there, Biz Nasty. It's a really interesting group. I'm really excited to see how the chemistry builds. So, and also tell us about your role with that group.
So I thought the first broadcast was great. I mean, how could you not love it, right? I mean, people can say whatever they want about the superstars in the NHL and how, you know, they don't show their personality. But Wayne Gretzky is Wayne freaking Gretzky. And I'm going to tune in anytime that he's on the air talking hockey. And so I thought it was really great. I actually, you know, thought that Wayne and Paul Bissonnette had a very entertaining dynamic. So I enjoyed that. I thought the boys did a great job. As for my role, I'm going to be a reporter for them. I'm still waiting on the government to approve my visa, truth be told. So you might not see me on Turner until November. But I'm excited. I'm excited to kind of get out in the field and do more reporting because, as you guys know, you know, I spend the majority of my career has been in the studio, and really the bubble 2 years ago in 2020 was really my first really big workload as a reporter, and I really, really enjoyed it and felt like I learned a lot and thrived. So I feel like without that experience of 65 days in the bubble, like maybe I don't get this job with Turner. So I'm really, really excited about it. I almost feel like I'm not a big enough deal to, like, be on the same cast as, like, Biz Nasty and Rick Tocchet and Anson Carter and Wayne Gretzky, but I'm really, really pumped. So, yeah, I'll see you guys on Turner soon, but I don't know when.
Very good. Very good. Now, I noticed on the Twitter feed here it says that you love potato chips, and I was just thinking, and Darren and Chase usually are downstairs where their setup is for the radio pre-post game show, but upstairs we do not have a press box per se. We have a media area, but it is well-stocked with a lot of variety of potato
Lots
chips.
Lots of
Chase,
chips.
You've been up
yeah.
there, right?
Oh, yeah.
We got sea salt and vinegar. We got the jalapeno, and we got the straight-up chips.
I got to tell you, I love a jalapeno-flavored chip. I really, really do. Miss Vicky's has a really good one.
Oh, yeah. We have those, so we're going to make sure that's well-stocked for you.
Those out. I'm going to have to come visit you guys while I'm there. I'll have to, like, seek you guys out and come hang for a little bit.
We're just going to go on and ask you on air. Yeah, you want to come do pregame with us for a segment? Come hang out with us?
We're going to put you through the whole car wash. You're going to go on the pregame.
TV.
Lindsay has to have you on her pregame show, so Darren's got to have you on his. So
we're going to have our people. Yeah, get with your people, and we're going to put you to work when you come to Nashville.
Yeah, I'll get your people to talk to my people. I think Amanda's probably listening to this interview right now. We'll work it out. Boys, we'll work it out, and then maybe a post-game beverage or something. I'm just saying, like,
okay.
if the stars align.
There we go. For sure. Jackie Redmond is with us, and I've got to ask you the non-hockey question, and these guys knew I would, but excited for you and your new gig with WWE and doing some stuff. As a big wrestling fan, I was at Raw a few weeks ago when it was in town, but how exciting is that you're a part of WWE now?
I got to tell you, as someone, you know, one question I've got a lot since I joined WWE and it became, you know, public knowledge is, you know, are you really a wrestling fan? Or are you just joining WWE because ABC? And no, like, I grew up loving wrestling, like playing WrestleMania 2000 with my sister, the Hardy Boys, Lita was my girl, the The Rock, of course, because who didn't love The Rock and the Stone Cold Steve Austin era. So I've loved wrestling for a long time. I did cover it in Canada for a little bit. But I got to tell you, it is, you know, Michael Cole is my boss. And any wrestling fan knows who Michael Cole is. So, yeah. You know, the fact that Michael Cole was, like, calling me up and being like, yeah, I'm going to bring you in, you know, see how you do on this show. Maybe you can come work for us. I was just like, this is a trip. Like, Michael Cole is calling me right now. That is so weird. But I'm so excited. I think the WWE just is such a – they're just, like, really the blueprint for sports entertainment and putting on an amazing show. And anybody that has – gone and watched a Monday Night Raw or SmackDown, or if you've been privileged enough to go to a WrestleMania, it is just the greatest show ever. It's yep. such an entertaining product, especially in person. And so I'm just thrilled to be a part of it. It's obviously sort of, I get to flex a bit of a different muscle talking WWE, and I'm really, really excited about that and to kind of get in there and mix it up with everybody over there.
We will. I'll just go on and say it. We'll see you Tuesday. We'll also tell you on Tuesday what name to drop at the bar after post game for someone to pick up the tab. I mean, we've got everything covered. We've got everything covered, Jackie. You just show up, and we'll take care of the rest.
I love it. You guys are going to give me all the secret codes and whatnot. I'm ready. I'm going to take over Nashville. 24 hours only.
Okay, just remember, though, if you get on one of those the rolling barges or buses or whatever they have now, you're on your own.
We're out. You're on your own. Any party bus, we're not
party
with
bus,
you.
Yes. That's you're where we draw own. The line.
Party tank, yeah, whatever I'm, else.
I might be a little old for the old party bus, but I appreciate the heads up.
They have party tanks, party tractors. I mean, you're going to see
all
a lot of crazy
things.
Stuff on the road downtown
Nashville.
Okay, I mean,
a party tractor sounds really cool.
They've got them.
Well, you'll see them.
Yeah, there's no telling.
Jackie, thanks so much for doing this. And honestly, we look forward to seeing you next week, finally, in person.
Yeah, see you in a few days, boys. Always love chatting with you.
All right, that is Jackie Redmond, NHL Network. And she's coming to town for the first time. She's going to take in the Preds and the Keens on Tuesday night. That'll be a lot of fun. We've talked to her over the years by phone. We've never met her in person. Hopefully that changes on Tuesday. We'll come back. We'll start the second hour. Big Joe on the go. That's next.